Let's do the 60-second savings challenge. Step one, download Rocket Money. Step two, link your accounts and see every subscription you're paying for. Tap one you don't use and cancel it. That's money back every month. Step three, create a financial goal. $50 every paycheck, or let the app automatically move small amounts of cash when you can afford it. In a week, you'll forget you set it up. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you've saved. Bonus challenge, upload an internet or phone bill and let Rocket Money try to lower it. You only pay if they find you savings. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. Make saving money the resolution you actually keep. Start the 60-second savings challenge at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
And now it's time for the Sports Kings from Queens.
Play clock at five. Pass is intercepted at the goal line by Malcolm Butler. Unreal. Malcolm Butler, who almost made the phenomenal play that wound up in Percy's arms. There are flags on the field for a celebration. Amazing. Butler, a rookie free agent out of West Alabama.
They try to pick play, Al. They tried to go here, but he beats them to the punch. And I'm sorry, but I can't believe the call.
Me neither.
I cannot believe the call. You've got Marshawn Lynch in the backfield. You've got a guy that's been borderline unstoppable in this part of the field. I can't believe the call.
And there is Brady. As demonstrative as ever, and Richard Sherman.
Welcome to the Sports Kings from Queens, where all the sports talk is royal, real, and straight from the boroughs. Today's Wednesday, February 4th. This is episode 216. I'm Gino, joined by my co-hosts, Kevin and Darren. Joe D, along for the ride tonight. Please catch us wherever you get your podcast. Make sure you like, subscribe, follow us on Facebook, YouTube, Instagram. Give us a like, join our pages. We want subscribers. Hit that button to join our pages. We'd love to hear from you. If you got something to say, tell us. Super Bowl coming up. So tonight, it's a Super Bowl preview. Break down the teams, the bets you want to make. We talk some Olympic hockey. We go around the world of sports. We're going to get it going with the Super Bowl to start it off. Super Bowl 60, where the Seahawks and the New England Patriots prepare for an epic rematch of the classic 2015 showdown. We are days away from the kickoff at Levi's Stadium in Santa Clara, where the Seahawks are a 4.5-point favorite, over under at 45.5 money line. If you want New England, it's plus 190. Joe, tell me about the Seahawks offense.
The Seahawks offense this Sunday is going to come down to the composure of Sam Darnold. Is he going to be able to stay calm and cool in the pocket like he did the past two playoff games? It's been a key because last year we saw Sam fade the end of the season and it cost the Vikings big when it came to the division title and again in the playoffs. But now with this opportunity of the Super Bowl, he looked great against the 49ers. He looked good against the Rams. He's been very composed. Secondary to that, JSN is going to be obviously a big key, but I think you have to keep your eye on Cooper Kupp because he is a former Super Bowl MVP and he still has the hands to go along with the speed and agility. And I think Cooper Kupp, A.J. Barner are going to be part of this big offense. And we can't count out Kenneth Walker III, triple sticks. He'll be getting the rock all day long. And, keeping that offense going. Without Charbonnet, it's going to be tough. But I think the Seahawks are all set. And don't forget, there's another side to this Seahawks team. They have a defense. So as long as their offense stays together, Kev's going to talk about their defense. And Kev, take it away.
Yeah, I mean, like you said, as long as Darnold doesn't turn over the ball and don't give up the short field, this defense has a chance to dominate. I mean, during the year, they were number one in points allowed per game. They're sixth in yards, third in rushing yards per game allowed. I mean, this is a tough, tough run defense. And it's set up, middle of the line, we know, with guys like Leonard Williams, the ex-Jet, with guys like Murphy in the middle there too. But, I think the biggest key to this matchup here with the run game is going to be DeMarcus Lawrence lining up against the rookie Will Campbell. You know, Campbell has struggled in pass protection this postseason. He's been below average in the pro football rankings for that. He has trouble with guys with longer arms than him, and that's what Lawrence has. He's got the long arms. He can really do a good job of stretching out plays, and I think what's going to be key there is for him to stretch out these plays and make sure that May cannot find the gaps to run. And if they can shut down this run game more for Drake May rather than the running backs, I think they have an excellent chance. The defensive backs, you know, with guys like Devin Witherspoon and with Nick Emenwori, go Gamecocks. You know, they play five defensive backs every pretty regularly. They do go to dime quite a bit. They run about a quarter of their time in the dime defense. They only give up 5 yards per attempt in their dime, which is the best except for the 2020 Rams in the last decade. I mean, this is a defense that you can't throw the ball against either. So I think this is going to be a really hard test for the Patriots to move the ball. Gino, what do you think the Patriots can do against the defense?
So the Pat offense is spearheaded by second-year quarterback MVP finalist Drake May. He threw 31 touchdowns in 14 regular season wins. But despite that, the offense has faced challenges in the postseason. They're only averaging 18 points a game. And now they're preparing for a matchup against the Seahawks' top-rated defense that you just mentioned. O-line is going to be challenged to protect May. They've already allowed 15 sacks in three postseason games. Offensive players to watch in this game, veterans, Stephon Diggs and tight end Hunter Henry. Now, at running back, Ramondre Stevenson is going to lead the way. They're going to mix in rookie Trevion Henderson. But the deep threat, Kayshon Boutte, who leads the team in receiving yards in the postseason, needs to step in and be big. I think one or two of these guys is going to have to make their presence felt for New England to come up with a win. But, Darren, offense can't do it alone. Tell me about the Pat defense.
Listen, the Pat defense is good. It's a strong defense. They're good up front. The defensive tackles, Barmore is good. Milton Williams is good. He's healthy. He's ready to go. The key is that they have to stop the running game without having to send run blitzes, okay? They have to be able to do that with their front guys and with Spillane in the middle kind of getting things done. Ellis also has to help out in that spot. But on the pass defense is going to be the key because the guy they have to stop is Jaxon Smith-Njigba. If it's me, okay, I sit there and I double-team JSN, but I don't do it with I don't do it with the top guy, Gonzalez. I do it with Bragg. I do it with Bragg and a safety. I put Gonzalez on the other side against either Shaheed or Cup. Take him out of the game. Take both receivers out and force them to beat me in the middle. I trust Jack Jones as my nickel guy. I want him to be guarding somebody in the middle right off the slot, and I'm going to count on my linebackers with the speed to kind of knock things down. Problem is with that theory is JSN lines up all over the field, so you'll see him in the backfield. You can't really double-team him from back there. You see him in the slot. They're going to have to play Jones on him when he's in the slot, right? So you can't do it that easily. But when he does line up wide, you have to take it away. They have to be able to stop the run with six in the box. They're going to have to be able to take away JSN and force Darnold to find a way to beat them. The other thing that happens in this is that Darnold is great against the blitz, but horrible when he's under pressure, which sounds like I'm saying an oxymoron, right? He's third against the blitz, 29th against pressure, which means that you have to take away his first read, on a hot blitz. When he gets to go out there and tries to go to his hot read, he's got to be taken away. You have to make him think. A Darnold turnover or two will be the key for if New England can win this game. That's really what it comes down to. They have to contain the run. The two teams are somewhat microcosms of each other. The defenses are strong enough to kind of win games for them. It's going to be which offense, and both quarterbacks have been a little bit prone to making mistakes, which offense is going to be able to execute a little bit better. So when I say that, now we all gave you a reason now. I gave you a reason why the Patriots defense can do it. Kev gave you the Seahawks defense. Joe gave you the Seahawks offense. Gino gave you the New England offense. What do you really think is going to happen in this game, Kev? Where do you think we go from here? Well, how do you think it shakes out with all the things that are going on?
We've seen the Patriots offense struggle so badly. I mean, their run in the playoffs has been one great defense after another. I mean, they've been playing top seven defenses the entire postseason. It showed up in the offense. They scored 54 points, which is the record for fewest points for teams have played three games. And you figure that also includes a pick six. and it includes a 12-yard drive. The offense has scored 40 points in three games. They have not moved the ball. Part of it was the weather in the second half last week against Denver. I know that, or the last game. But this defense, this offense has struggled big time. If it wasn't for the fact that they've played Stidham, and they had Stroud given four turnovers in the first half, and playing an offensive line, and the Chargers, I think the four of us could have gotten a sack on Justin Herbert. That's how bad the offensive line is.
You've been close.
you know, I think the Seahawks defense can really shut down the New England offense as long as Darnold doesn't give them the short field. That's going to be the big key.
Joe, thoughts?
You know, Sam Darnold. I mean, I said it at the beginning. It's his composure. It's his game at this point. You know, think about it. He's the veteran quarterback in this game. And I think, like you said, yes, they're going to keep an eye on JSN. They're going to do whatever they can to control him. But we do have to think about A.J. Barner. A.J. Barner had a big touchdown against the Rams. A.J. Barner's in this game as the tight end, and you can't cover everybody. You can hope you can. You take JSN out. You still, like you said, have to talk about Cooper Kupp. And don't forget the special teams. Remember, Shahid took the opening kickoff against the 49ers back. I mean, set the tone right there, and the 49ers were never the same. So it could come down to that kickoff, that special teams to start this game. I mean, it didn't work for the Bears, but when Devin Hester was back there, he took the opening kickoff against the Colts. I mean, that was a bad weather game, and the Colts were destined. But that's what it takes. Something like that by Shahid might be the difference maker. If we're talking about two teams that are so close together defensively, that's what it could come down to. One special teams play.
G, your thoughts?
I think Seattle's going to put up about 30 points. So I think New England needs to put up 30 to win this game. I don't think they can against this defense. I think this is Seattle's game to lose at this point. The other thing, I have a feeling we're going to see a lot of sacks by Seattle. You know, in three games, New England's offensive line has given up 15 sacks on Drake May in three postseason games. That's five a game. That's a lot to be consistently going down, losing yardage. I think it's a big factor. I like Seattle minus the points in this game. I think, and that the over-under 45, I think it's definitely over. I think Seattle, you know, so far in two postseason games, they put up 72 points. I think they put up 30 in this game. So to me, that's the baseline. If you think Seattle can put up 31, I think bet Seattle. In fact, if you like the line, takes New England to score 26, I guess. But I think Seattle winds up winning this game, and I think they cover. Darren?
I'm the opposite of you on this one. I think it's low scoring. I think that New England's biggest loss of the season was 7 points. Seattle's biggest loss of the season was 4 points. So neither team got blown out in any losses that they had. So we shouldn't theoretically have last year's game, which was just horrible from the first quarter on. So hopefully it's not. This team is the reason why Sam Darnold's not a Jet anymore. He saw ghosts out there, and they had him filmed, and all of a sudden everyone was like, oh, we got to get rid of this poor guy because he sucks. He sucks so bad that he got to a damn Super Bowl. He sucks that bad that he got the Vikings into the playoffs, and the year after, they were sniffing 500. So apparently Darnold doesn't suck. It's just the Jets that suck. But I'll go on the Jets later. You know what? New England's got something about it that I can't freaking stand. They get a little bit of luck that goes their way. The fumbles fall into their hands. Stephon Diggs is a guy that makes big plays in big games. He has that little TO factor to him in a big spot. I think New England's going to win a low-scoring game. I think it's close, but I think it's New England. I'm going to say New England wins 16-13, but I'm going to say 16-12, I think, right? Don't we have 6-2, Gino, in our pool?
We do.
The other way? So we're going to go 16-12 in this one and root ourselves home. Kev, where do you think the score is going to go?
I agree with your 16 points there for New England. I've got Seattle able to score a little bit more. I've got Seattle doing enough. 24-16 Seattle. Okay. Again, take the under, take the Seattle minus points.
All right, Joe.
I'm going to take the Seahawks 24 and the Patriots 21. So I think it's going to be the under, and I wouldn't take minus the points. So I'm going to take the Seahawks on the money line, and I'm going to take the under of 40. It's going to be 24-21.
That's 45.
What I'm going to go with.
Yep, yeah, the spread's 45.5, right?
Yep.
Yeah, so just on that. Joe's doing it by a lot. Joe's doing it by a lot. I mean, listen, when we break down this game, I don't have an allegiance to either team, but I am going to be rooting hard for Seattle. I just think New England finds a way to win this. So I'm the lone wolf in that. Gino's the lone wolf on the over, and we're split on how we're going to bet the money lines. But, gee, there's more to it than that. There's exotics. Give me some exotics.
By the way, just for the knowledge, the underdogs 15-7 versus the spread in the Super Bowl the last 22 games, and they've covered five straight, the underdogs. So that goes, you guys that took New England plus the points, that's not a bad job. Let's hit some easy ones. So Super Bowl MVP, Sam Darnold to plus 120, Drake May at plus 235. And then after that, everything jumps around, as we know. Darren, JSN.
Is there a defensive player anywhere near the top? I mean,
yeah, I'm going to get there in 2 seconds. Okay. JSN is at plus 550. The lowest defensive player is Ernest Jones at plus 7,500.
Wow. I wouldn't have picked Ernest Jones either, so there you go.
No.
Super Bowl MVP, if it's not going to a quarterback, it becomes very rare to start with right off the bat. Joe, you keep mentioning A.J. Barner, plus 12,000, by the way.
There you go. Well, what about Cooper Kupp? He is a Super Bowl MVP.
Plus 9,000 for Cooper Kupp.
Yeah. A bargain.
TD scorers. So Diggs at plus 250. Booty at plus 310. Shaheed plus 350. These are the other ones, not the main guys. Okay. Seattle defense plus 370. New England defense plus 550. A Geno favorite to come up here, Mac Hollins at plus 425. New England likes going to Mac Hollins in games like this. And Joe, you mentioned AJ Barner. How about Jake Bobo to score at plus 1,000?
You know what? Throw a couple of shekels down.
Gino, what are the odds on Ramondre Stevenson?
I don't have it right in front of me, Darren.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay.
Let's get into a couple of parlays. Easy one. So I got a mixed parlay for you. New England to money line. New England to win the half. Seattle to win the game.
Okay.
Plus 500.
It's not bad.
Now, if you like it the other way, Seattle to win the half, New England to win the game, you get plus 700 on that. Okay. If you are thinking that this is going to be a heavily running game, plus 209, I got Kenneth Walker the third and Ramondre at plus 150 yards total, plus 209. If you think the quarterbacks are going to have a negative impact on this game, Drake May and Darnold to each throw at least one interception, plus 200. Let's go to a couple of New England ones. New England money line and Drake May to throw two touchdowns, plus 335. Now I got one that I'll be throwing in. Drake May with two or more touchdowns and Mac Hollins at plus 40 yards or more, plus 390. Not bad. Okay. On the Seattle side, Darren, here's one for you. Darnold, two touchdowns or more. JSN with 100 receiving yards and two touchdowns, plus 700.
Okay.
Couple of defensive ones for you, Darren. And here's one I'm actually going to bet myself. So Seattle money line, Leonard Williams and DeMarcus Lawrence with one sack each, plus 550.
It's not bad.
Now, if you like Seattle minus the points at minus 4.5 with both of those to get a sack, it's plus 700. But here's the big one, Darren.
I'm ready.
Leonard Williams, DeMarcus Lawrence to both have two sacks each or more.
Okay.
Plus 5,500.
That's pretty huge.
Wow.
Okay. And remember, they've given up 15 sacks already in three games.
Yep. No doubt about it. No doubt about it. Gino, do you have a first to 10 there for me? I'm kidding.
I don't.
This is a college basketball bet that we made, that Gino makes a living on. And does well with, by the way, which is why I throw it out there. Sorry, G.
All right, that's okay. So let's get into a couple of crazy ones now. So,
okay,
colors of the Gatorade.
Oh God,
Blue at plus 200, orange at plus 250, yellow and green at plus 260, purple at plus 800, red and pink plus 1100. Do you think there's going to be an octopus in the game? That's plus 1400. Remember, the octopus is a player scores the touchdown and then immediately scores the two-point conversion after. Kev, the all-powerful Scorigami.
Scorigami.
Plus 1800. And that is a never-before-seen final score in any game in NFL history.
Plus 1,800, that's it?
Plus 1,800.
Now, here, that. Wow.
Okay. So here's a little different one for you. This is at minus 105, okay? You can have it either the over or the under at minus 105. Charlie Puth, who's singing the national anthem, goes over 119 seconds. It has gone under in three of the last four Super Bowls, so you may want to bet the under if you're thinking about it.
Oh, God.
And, Darren, here's the wackiest one of all.
I can't wait.
Who does the MVP thank first? You can bet on he thanks God at minus 290. His teammates at plus 210. The fans at 18-1, the coach at 25-1, or his family at plus 1260.
Wow.
So God is the big favorite.
I'm just making sure that Jesus counts as God.
Yes.
Sometimes I just lead out with the Lord and Savior Jesus Christ.
There you go.
I just want to make sure we're on the same page.
The correct phrasing of the bet is he thanks an all-powerful deity. So, yes.
Perfect. Just want to make sure I got it.
He gives thanks to a deity was the actual
it's
bet.
All over this. There's no doubt about it.
All right. So I'm going with the Seattle parlay with Leonard Williams and DeMarcus Lawrence with two sacks each in the game. That's one of my favorites. Listen. I think your best bet is to bet one of the quarterbacks to win the Super Bowl MVP and take that plus the game, either the money line or the points. That's usually the way to go. You're not going to get huge odds, but you know, you'll get plus 340 or something like that. And that's probably one of the better odds to go with. You know, you get paid 3-1 basically. And that's my bets for Super Bowl 60.
That's crazy. Wow. I didn't even realize you could bet about who you thank first. That's awesome. That's awesome. I'm sorry, G.
New one I saw this year. That was the new one I saw this year.
That's crazy. So, Kev, the Jets have a new offensive coordinator.
Frank Reich. Yay.
Guy we wanted, I think.
Uninspiring, but you know what? Yeah, he's going to come in. He's a coach. You know, he's done a good job coaching. You know, he's a guy – He had good success as a head coach with the Colts.
He's an adult in the room, which they didn't have on the offensive side of the ball.
That's
what I like. We have an adult in the room.
I think he'll help Glenn from a head coaching perspective, give him a sounding board, which I don't think Glenn had on that staff last year.
Nope.
And, you know, like you said, you know, offensively, you know he's going to be solid. It depends on what the quarterback you get.
Were they teammates with the Jets, Glenn and Reich?
Unfortunately, for those of us who remember, they were teammates on that 1-15
1996
Jets team. Now, great memories of that year.
According to everything I heard about the defensive coordinator, by the way, Glenn was all set to hire Martindale, and then Woody stepped in and made him, after he was flying in, and said, I'm already paying you $12 million a year. You're a defensive coach. Why am I going to pay another defensive coordinator? So you got to love where this is going. If that's true, and again, that was inside sources with the Jets, not inside sources that I have, because I don't have any, but inside sources with the Jets saying that this was what happened. And if that happened, wow, we might have another five game and firing situation where Frank Reich takes over as the coach. This is because it won't be it won't be the defensive coordinator, Duker. So no. I don't know. It's a little scary, G.
You mentioned Ramondre before. He's at plus 140 to score.
Okay. Just curious.
And if you put it in your bet, which is the New England Patriots plus the points and the under and Ramondre to score, you can get plus 700. So
not bad. Not bad at all. So, Joe, any thoughts on the Jet OC?
No, I think it's a good pick. I think, like you say, Darren, adult in the room. He could be head coach in waiting as well, in case something does, if it does get off to a bad start, which I don't want to see happen to Aaron Glenn. I really do. I thought he was the right hire at the time, but then who knew that 35 coaching positions were going to be available this year and all these other spots. But then I always feel like the Jets waited, even with these coordinators, until everybody else hired somebody, and then the Jets are going to make a selection. So it's like we miss out on some of these other guys too. But
Sean McDermott's free for next year. So and so might be Tomlin. So there might be at least a couple of legit coaches if they feel like Glenn's not the guy.
That's true.
Yep.
But, yeah, we'll see. The Giants also, they went out and got Matt Nagy from the Chiefs. Nagy left Kansas City not because of any other reason but the fact he wants to call offensive plays. And when you play for Andy Reid, you don't get to make the offensive calls. He thought that there was no way of his improving unless he was able to call plays. So it wasn't like he left in bad terms, and Reed was touting him everywhere he went. Nagy actually didn't do a bad job in Chicago early on with Justin Fields, who we came to realize isn't very good. they, as always, regressed against with the Jets. So the Giants have the Giants' new coaching staff looks pretty promising when you break it all down. And you know, we're going to see how the Giants do, but they are probably the best coaching staff, or second, if you want to give the Eagles the nod, because of winning a couple Super Bowls with Sirianni. And obviously, you know, that goes somewhere with clout. Harbaugh's got one, he's got two, but he didn't have to go up against Brady every year for all those years either. So it's Brady and Mahomes are a little bit more of a challenge to get through. So you can't really crucify the guy in the AFC. But Giants are going in the right direction. A little more than Kev, me and Joe both think the Jets made the right move this week. Kev's still a little doubtful. I understand why. You know, we'll see what happens here.
I don't think he's so much doubtful as more just he's 64 and, you know, just like, been there, done that in the league. I don't know.
I get it. If Bruce Arians came out, I'd take him. He's like 90. Yeah, but I'm just saying, you know, I mean, but I understand what you're saying.
And the only other team that made some moves this week, Arizona, hiring ex-Jet offensive coordinator in the back of the floor to be their head coach, and hiring ex-Jet offensive coordinator Nathaniel Hackett to be their OC. Are they not watching Jets game film for the last decade or plus?
Is there a chance, this is going to be the dumbest thing you hear, that Rodgers ends up in Arizona?
Not with the connection with the floor. That's not the dumbest idea.
No, but the connection with Hackett, why would you give that guy an OC job when he sucked as an OC?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Well,
he has a connection with the other LaFleur a little bit, and he's got a connection with Hackett. I'm just saying, I don't see it, because why would you play at 42 on a team that has no chance to be any higher than fourth in a four-team division in your league? But
especially that division, Mike.
That's the best division in football.
Yeah. I think with the McCarthy hiring, though, in Pittsburgh, I think that solidifies that Rodgers will probably be back.
I think there's a good chance of it. I agree with you, Jay. I think that was their best chance of it anyway.
Yeah.
So anybody else have withdrawal this weekend from no football, or was it just me that was like, what am I doing on Sunday?
Yeah, it was tough. It was a tough Sunday.
You know? And after this week, we have to wait till August. So it's for preseason. And it's a late Labor Day this year, so it's a very late start to the season next year. It's the 13th, I think.
Pitchers and catchers, though.
No, baseball's coming up.
Yeah, they're coming.
The Met fans are all fired up. They're ready to go.
So, all right, so we'll move over to the NBA. So the NBA trade deadline is actually 4 p.m. tomorrow. But I don't think anybody told all these teams, because there was a slew of trades that happened today. Kev, want to take us through some of the big ones?
Yeah, I think, you know, you started off the Jazz getting Jaren Jackson Jr. and three others from the Grizzlies. They pick up Walter Clayton Jr., of course, a freshman guard from Florida last year who was so instrumental for them winning the championship. They also got three ones in the deal, which gives the Grizzlies 12 ones over the next 7 years. And that's not the most. OKC and the Nets both have 13. Wow. OKC has 13 OKC.
They dealt one, though. Is that still keep them at 13?
I think they were at 14 before that.
Okay, so now they dropped to 13.
Wow.
I mean, my goodness. You're the best team in the league, and you've got all this draft capital, too. My goodness. Bulls and Celtics. Interesting trade. Celtics trade some of their guard depth, Anthony Simons, to the Bulls for some front court help, and Nikola Vucevic.
Vucevic.
Vucevic. Clippers and Cavaliers. Here's a name that always pops up every, I think it's about every year and a half now. James Harden requested a trade, surprisingly. He goes to the Cavaliers for Darius Garland in a second.
Actually, Kev, the information that came out today is that Harden is now saying he did not request a trade.
Oh, he didn't. That's my first. I think
makes the whole thing much funnier.
Yeah.
He's a cancer. No, why would you even make the trade for him if you had a Cavs?
Yeah. Like you said, OKC trade one of their ones. They pick up Jared McCain from the 76ers for a one and three twos. I mean, that's just incredible. I think especially with SGA all of a sudden being out with a abdominal injury, you don't know how that's going to linger. That's a nice pickup for them.
Then who's going to get the imaginary fake foul calls?
Yeah,
I mean, who's going to step in and get those for SGA, who's made that team freaking unwatchable? Anyway, I digress.
And the biggest name trade is probably Anthony Davis. I mean, the Mavericks have given up the AD dream after last year's disaster of a trade for Luka. Davis goes to the Wizards with D'Angelo Russell and two others for Chris Middleton, a bunch of other guys, two ones and 3 seconds.
Yeah.
So not quite the haul that they got. They gave up a lot. They didn't really get enough for AD there after the Doncic trade, too. I mean, that Mavericks are just a mess.
The one thing I'll say, though, is Washington's done something they haven't done in a while. They made themselves interesting, okay? Now, you got Trae Young and you have Anthony Davis, okay? The kid Sar is having a hell of a year, right?
Yeah.
That's a statistic. I've seen highlights of him. He looks like a player. They've got young talent. They've got players. Washington hasn't been talked about since, like, Wall was, like, a rookie or a second-year guy. And they had Wall and Beal, and then they dismantled that whole thing. Washington's, and they weren't even considered great at that point. They were just considered maybe up and coming. Washington realizes how weak the East is, and they're going to make a run at it with some injury riddled guys. Interesting to see a new team try to, you know, poke its head in there because none of the top teams look like they're invincible. I mean, Detroit's playing really well, but they don't really scare you. You don't feel like you can't beat them. And we'll get more into the NBA playoffs and stuff like that. But I thought Washington had a very interesting day.
Yep. Any other trades, Gio, that you want to touch on? Or?
Well, the Nets three-team trade.
Oh, yeah.
So the Raptors get Chris Paul. The Nets get Ochi Agbaye. The Clips get Vanja Marinkovic. Who hasn't played in the NBA yet.
Oh, there you go.
Both Serbia, so that should be interesting. Listen,
the key to that trade. Raptors and Clippers are both trying to get below tax levels and save money that way. The Nets had some extra cap space, so they get Agbaye and they pick up a second for their troubles to take on salary. That's what the Nets are doing right now. They're collecting.
Absolutely.
Give me your junk. Give me the contracts you don't want, and give me some more draft capital.
I think the most interesting thing that came out today was the Knicks weren't in any trades. Now, you got a full another day before anything happened, so we'll see what happens tomorrow.
Do you think they're going to get Giannis?
All the experts I don't think, Joe. Everyone says that they're, like, not even in the top four for him
now. They
don't have the assets to get him.
They don't have the first-round picks.
They would really have to tear apart the whole roster to get him.
Yeah, it's a lot of moves. I don't think the Knicks are going to be able to do it.
Okay.
But now suddenly you never know if Washington makes another move. Who the hell knows what they're doing?
Yeah. All right. Kev, you got a couple of hidden gems for us?
Yeah, so we mentioned from the trade there. Anthony Davis in his Mavericks career had 587 points. Luka, who they traded from, has 762 first quarter points.
Oh, jeez.
Sam Darnold is the third quarterback to start a Super Bowl on his fifth team.
Wow.
Who are the other two? One, you have to go back to a Super Bowl in the 60s.
Oh, God.
So was it Earl Morrill?
Yes.
Okay.
Wow.
And the other one was a decade ago.
Well, I was going to say Rich Gannon, so it's more recent than that. Okay, a decade ago.
Or just under a decade, I guess, maybe.
It wasn't Foles. He didn't play five teams.
Who's the other guy that followed Gannon in with that team? Not with the – no? Kev, I'm off? Okay.
You're off.
Give it to us. Oh, five. Joe, you have it?
No, five teams is tough.
Chris Chandler.
Ah, the crystal chandelier. Always injured. But when healthy, could sling it. But the crystal chandelier was hurt a lot.
Drew Brees.
Yep.
He take a 11-year stretch from 2008 to 2018. He threw 386 passing touchdowns. That's four more than the Jets have thrown since 2000.
Wow. I actually had that one, and I'm going to cross it out of my list.
Wow.
Phil Housley has the record of 19 goals as an 18-year-old defenseman. Guess there is such a thing as people keeping track of that. Matthew Schaefer's got 16 with 25 games left.
Wow.
Good chance he gets there.
Got a shot.
Yeah.
Got a shot.
And Mickey Lolich passed away. He was the last guy to start, complete three games in the World Series, won all three back in 68. Beat, although to say this for Darren's benefit, Bob Gibson in game seven. Last out of that game was Tim McCarver. But, I mean, I was looking at his stats there. 1971, Mickey Lolich, 45 games, 45 starts. He completed 29 of them through 376 innings.
Wow.
Guys, aces need 2 years to throw that now.
Maybe even three, some of these guys.
Yeah. So those are some of my hidden gems.
Okay. Cool. All right, we're going to head over to a little college basketball. Darren, you want to take it away for now?
Here we are. We're going to get into it a little bit this week. Just a couple of good games upsets before we get into the top 10 for the week. Texas Tech had a tough week. They lost at UCF, then they lost at home to Kansas. Neither one's a bad loss, but they played without their point guard, Christian Anderson, in the second game, and that really seemed to cost them against Kansas. They were up in that game late and just kind of gave it away. Arkansas lost at home to Kentucky. Never say a bad loss to Kentucky, but Arkansas has been playing real well. Gino, one of your squads, Gonzaga, they knocked off St. Mary's. That was a big game for them. Michigan gets the win at Michigan State. Kev, the game was tied 55-55. I listen to what you tell me. And Michigan was up the whole game. Michigan State ties it up at 55, and then Michigan went on this run. Michigan State followed up with a great performance at Minnesota tonight where they lost at the Barn. So they've had a two-game losing streak. Yeah. Kansas, great week. We talked about Texas Tech. They also beat BYU, not an easy team to beat. Florida crushed Bama, crushed them. Wasn't even close. Bama came back and beat Texas A&M tonight. Illinois won at Nebraska, returned the favor. Nebraska beat them earlier in the year. They were up 38-11 last time I looked a couple seconds ago against Northwestern. So Illinois is playing real well right now. And for St. John's, guys, we got the huge game against UConn. They look like they're fine with their seating and with their net and all that stuff, but they have no great wins. They've lost to everybody close. They're going to have to win one of these. The best win right now is Villanova. They're going to have to find a way to – at Villanova, but they're going to have to find a way to beat UConn, I think, this week just to have a shot to move up. Top 10, okay, or top 11 we're doing tonight for a special reason. Arizona's 22-0, one of two undefeated teams, Miami over Ohio being the other one. Michigan 20-1. We have a new listener that likes Michigan. They're playing great basketball right now. UConn 22-1. Duke 21-1 is the four seed. The five seed is Illinois 19-3. And Kev, you've been following this team. Tell me a little about Illinois.
Yeah, I mean, this is a team that really strives in this, four out, one in type of offense. Great offensive rebound even with that. But this is a team that really goes inside, kicks it back out for the three. They're taking over 50% of the shots from three-point range. So if you like teams that come down, pass it around, take a three, Illinois is your team. Very guard-heavy, of course, with that. Wagler's averaging 18. Boswell's averaging 14. Andre Stojakovic, yes, son of Peja Stojakovic, he's averaging 13.
Transferred out of Cal. Couldn't wait to get out of there with the Illinois.
But they've also got size. You know, they've got the 6'9 freshman Mirkovic, who's averaging 12 and 8, I should say. And then the 7'1 junior center from Croatia, Ivicic, who's averaging 10 and 5. But even he'll step outside. He'll take 4 threes a game. So this is a team that's very heavy on the 3-point shot. Fun to watch if you want a team that runs up and down. Let's see the three falls in the tournament game.
Gotcha.
You know, their losses, 3 losses, they lost to Alabama in neutral court. They lost to UConn in neutral court. And they lost to Nebraska, which they got their win back. They've beaten Texas Tech. They've beaten Tennessee. And the biggest one is probably at Purdue. So, you know, they've beaten some talented teams as well.
Illinois is a good squad and a team that's rising right now. The 6th seed, 22-1 Gonzaga. Gino, you touched on them last week. You like what you see from this team, correct?
Yeah, and that's a good win against St. Mary's.
Absolutely. They were really in control of that game. I know they were all still really good. The 7th's Iowa State, and I've been following the Cyclones a little bit. If you want to find an underrated 20-2 team, here they are. Nobody's talking about them because the Big 12 is stacked, especially up top. Any of the 5 starters could be the star of this team. Milan Momcilovic, 18.5 points, three rebounds. He shoots 55% from the floor, 54% from 3. Tamin Lipsy gives them that point guard that everybody needs. Averages 13 points and 5.5 rebounds and 2.5 steals a game. He also shoots 48% from the floor. Joshua Jefferson's that other guy, 17 points, 8 rebounds, 5 assists, shoots 50% from the field, 41% from 3. This team shoots the ball really well. The other thing they do is they pass the ball really well. 19 assists per game. They shoot 51% from the floor, 41% from 3. They really just shoot the lights out every single night, and their opponents only shoot 42% from the floor. They're a pretty good rebounding team, too. They're +7, despite the fact that they're not a real good team with size. The bench doesn't really score. They're 254th in the country. They don't have a shot blocker, and they only shoot 69% from the line. They can beat anybody. Their 2 losses, they lost at Kansas. They got blown out in that one. And then they lost at Cincinnati. They lost in the same week back-to-back. They beat St. John's amongst some other teams that were early on. Iowa State's really a dangerous team. The 8 team is Houston, the runner-up from last year. Joe, you've been following Houston. Give us a little bit on them.
I hear you. So after that tough loss in the championship game, they came out this year. Led this year by a freshman, Kingston Flemings, who's putting up 17 points per game along with 5 assists. And working with him is Emmanuel Sharp, the senior, and he's averaging 16 points. They had the early season win over Auburn, a 1-point win down in Birmingham, and they beat Texas Tech at home, but then they lost to Texas Tech on the road, as well as a loss to Texas on a neutral court early in the season. Now, they have a gauntlet. You talk about the Big 12 coming up in the next, starting on February 16th. They're going at Iowa State, they're home to Arizona, and then at Kansas, 3 in a row. So that's going to really test Houston going into the conference tournament and then again into the NCAA tournament. But I think Kelvin Sampson has these guys ready to go. They got to avenge that loss last year in the championship.
Cool. The 9 team is Nebraska. That was me. I had them last week. They lost this week. So I gave them the little jinx, but this is a really good team that shoots the ball well. The 10's Michigan State, Kev. 2 losses in a row. You still feel pretty good about this team?
Oh, yeah. A little February swoon here, but they'll bounce back in March.
It's not Izzo time yet.
It's not there yet. He's still building it. The 11, Kansas. Gino, you like Rock Chalk Jayhawk. Tell us why.
Big-time guard play. Darren Peterson could be a top 3 pick, 21 points per game, leading the way.
He could be a top 1 pick, by the way.
Yeah, probably. They've now won 6 in a row, 3 against top 13 teams. They just got finished beating Texas Tech on Monday. They're at 7-2. They're like hiding in the weeds right now, like 5th place team in the Big 12. That's gonna change. We're gonna see them rise up. Sophomore center Flory Bendinga, one of the nation's premier rim protectors. He's got 2.7 blocks, 9 rebounds a game. They got length, they got versatility, athleticism. The only problem they have is their 3-point consistency could drive them out of some of these games. We saw it earlier in the year. That was one of their losses against Connecticut. that they tried to shoot some threes, took them right out of the game. They got some good wins, and now they're on a roll here. So we're going to see how they're going to flow into tournament play the way they are right now. Joe mentioned it, big game coming up. We're going to see how they play. I like Kansas a lot, Darren.
Yeah, they're a good squad. They're playing great ball, and when Peterson's healthy, this team is different. Kev, you've been keeping an eye a little bit on the defending champs.
Yeah. I mean, this is a team that, you know, probably a little underrated to start the season, coming off the defending champs. They started off tough. You know, they were 5-4 in the first 9 games, including losses opening night to Arizona. They lost to TCU by 4 in a neutral court. They lost at Duke by 1. They lost to UConn in neutral court by 4. They've bounced back. They've won 11 out of 13. One of those losses was at Missouri. You know, SEC road game, that's fine. The loss that makes no sense is Auburn at home. That's a tough loss. But
they got beat up in that game.
Yeah. But they've got their some good wins too. Georgia, Tennessee by 24. At Vandy by 4. Alabama, who they just beat by 23 to knock Alabama out of the top 25. This is a team that's heavy on the forward play. You know, they've got Huff from last year, who's averaging 17.5. Condon, 13.8, 8 rebounds, almost 4 assists per game. Chinyelu at center, averaging 12 points, 11 rebounds. Guard play, Boogie Fland from the Bronx here, 11 points, 4 assists. Lee, the other guard, almost 11 points, 3.5 assists. You know, this is a team that utilizes a big lineup. They want to rebound the ball, get the scoring in the paint, set up some good shots, open shots with some good passing from the bigs. And this is a team that really relies on the two. They take less than a third of their shots from three-point range. So this is a team that really, I mean, unlike everybody else, it feels like they play old-fashioned basketball in some ways.
They do.
And you know what? If this team peaks at the right time, this can be a very dangerous team because we know that Golden's a good coach.
He won last year.
No Clayton this year, but, you know, still, I mean, terrific, terrific all-around team.
Cool. Joe, you've been following another team out there. You've been looking at Carolina Blue, huh?
Carolina Blue, Hubert Davis. So they're led by a freshman as well, Caleb Wilson, who's just short of averaging a double-double. He's averaging 20 a night with 9.8 rebounds. And they've got a transfer came out of Arizona. How good have Arizona been if they kept this? I mean, they're already undefeated. But Henri Vezier, who's averaging 17-9 every night. So they have those two. They still have Seth Trimble back from last year, who's averaging 14 a game. Their top two scorers are scoring 45% of the points for Carolina. They had a big early win against Geno's Kansas team. They had the early season loss to Michigan State. But this is crazy, but the ACC is now a West Coast conference. So they had back-to-back West Coast losses to Stanford and Cal just a couple of weeks ago. So if they kept it as just we stayed on the East Coast, boys, like we're supposed to, we wouldn't have had these problems. But put them out west, and they're in trouble. And then they had a home, they had a loss against SMU. But right now, it's 6-3. They're sitting fifth in the ACC. This Saturday night, tune in. They got Duke Saturday night. They're hosting Duke, and then they go to Duke March 7th to close out the season in Cameron. So it'll be a good test for North Carolina on the way out the rest of the season.
Cool. G, you've been sticking in the ACC, a team you've been looking at in the Wahoos. You like Virginia Cavaliers, no?
Yeah. Virginia, 8-2 right now, 19 in the ACC, 19-3 overall, coming off a couple of wins. They're led by sophomore guard Fizz de Ridder from Belgium, leading scorer at 17 points per game. The other three guards that they rely on, they're all transfers. So Dalen Hall from BYU had some really good playmaking ability to the mix. Big weakness for them is defense. You know, they're soft inside. They tend to get out rebounded. Because of the fast pace they play with all these guards, though, unfortunately, they turn the ball over a lot. They're averaging 10 turnovers a game. So they're going to have to control that for Virginia to make an impact in the ACC. But they're at 18 net right now, so they're looking like they're in control of their own destiny as we head into the middle of February here. Darren?
Yeah, and I'm sticking in the ACC. The Clemson Tigers, team that Kevin loves, team's 18-4, 8-1 in conference play, only loss home to NC State in overtime, all right? So they've been pretty good. Their only other losses, they lost at Georgetown, which makes no sense because that team is not really fired. They also lost at Alabama by 6, and they lost on a neutral court against BYU by 3. So they've been pretty competitive. This is a team that plays a little bit different, much like Kev was talking about with Florida. This team really slows it down. This team plays with no pace whatsoever. You know, they're very balanced. Their leading score averages 12 points a game, and R.J. Godfrey shoots 65% from the floor, but everything's a dunk. Dylan Hunter's their guy. He's, you know, 8.7 points a game, 4 rebounds a game, 3 assists a game, a steal a game. They're balanced. 9 guys average over 16 minutes on this team. They shoot it well, 46%, but they hold their opponents under 40, and that's the key for this team. They're a good rebounding team. They're number one in the ACC in bench scoring. They're not good from 3, and they don't have a go-to scorer down the stretch, which I think are the things that could hurt this team going forward. And they don't block shots either, but they do rebound. So I think that Clemson is a team that has played everybody well. They won at Georgia earlier. You know, they've got a couple of quality wins. Obviously, they've done great in the conference so far. We're going to see what happens. Last year, this was the team that got upset by McNeese in the first round, if you remember watching that in Atlantic City. So, you know, this team has not done great in the tournament. But Brownell always has his team ready in the regular season. So college basketball, listen, we're trying to cover a few teams for you so you know who to pick and why when you get up to your brackets. We'll keep this going every single week. And I guess we're going back to you, G, right? We're going to talk a little Olympics, correct?
Yeah, well, before we get to the Olympics, you had a couple of buried treasures for
us? I do have a couple of buried treasures. Let me get to them because I'm on the wrong page, but now I'm on the right page. So here we go. So I had a Drew Brees snap. I'm going to throw that one away. So Jack Nicklaus, you know, we talk about golf a little bit every now and then. He won 18 majors. Also has the record for most runner-up finishes with 19. Also has the most top 10 finishes with 73 in majors history. Jack Nicklaus is the best ever. There's really no other way to put it. A little hockey one for you guys because we all like hockey fights. We like old-school hockey. And we remember Tony Twist. We remember the Twister and Rob Ray. So in 1995, they had a fight where Twist broke Ray's orbital bone. As they're skating back to the penalty box, Rob Ray says, "Am I no longer allowed to go to your celebrity motorcycle event?" Twist replies, "Excuse my language, everyone. Fuck no, of course you can ride with me." Ray responds, "My face, it doesn't look good, does it?" Twist said, "No, buddy, I think you're going to need to go to the hospital. Quick for that one." These two guys just fought. Yep. Buddy, pal, go there. Ray's description of the injury: some air went under my skin, went down into my cheek, hit my jaw, then came back to my face as a bubble. The whole team was watching in the dressing room when the air pocket hit my eye. The eye shut and I couldn't pry it open for 7 days. Had to wait until the air worked itself out. You got to love the guys that knew their job was simply to fight sometimes and turn the tide. Tony Twist and Rob Ray. I know not everybody loves fighting in old school hockey, but we do. So that's why I mentioned it.
Well, didn't he ask the trainer to cut him?
He did.
Cut me, Mickey. Cut me.
No, he just didn't open the eye for 7 days. The Prince and Cecil Fielder thing, we've all heard the stat, right? They both had the same number of home runs lifetime, right? They both had 97 two-out home runs. They both had 49 home runs in the fourth inning. They both had 29 home runs in the fifth inning. And they both had 18 home runs in the ninth inning. You can't make up this father-son combination. One last one, and it's a little bit of another baseball one real quick. Darren Erstead, you know, good player, right? You guys remember 2000? This guy had 240 hits, scored 121 runs, hit 25 homers, 100 ribbies, 28 steals, hit 355, 406 on base percentage, slugging a 541, a WAR of 8.3, and he finished eighth in the MVP voting. Frank Thomas, Delgado, A-Rod 3, Delgado 4, Pedro 5, Edgar 6, Manny 7, then Erstead, and then Nomar finished ninth, and he hit 372 that year. And then Gino was 10. Just to talk about 2000, how sick it was statistically. So, you know, it shows you that you can hit home runs, drive in runs, and still hit for average because nobody seems to think so. But you know, baseball was still pretty good back in 2000. And those are my buried treasures for the week, guys.
All right. Olympics start this Friday in Milan Cortina.
They started today.
The opening ceremony is Friday, Kev. The NHL players will take center stage in the Olympics for the first time in 12 years when the puck drops next week. It's the first time since Sochi in 2014. Finland are the defending champs from Beijing in 2022. Only defenseman Mikko Latonen is a returning member of the 2022 gold-winning team. By the way, the other 24, they all play in the NHL right now. So
you're stealing all my lines about Finland.
It's opening, dude.
You're stealing all my lines.
Group A teams, Canada, Czech Republic, Switzerland, and France. Group B is Finland, Sweden, Slovakia, Italy. Group C, United States, Germany, Latvia, Denmark. Kev, we're going to start it off with you.
Yeah, we'll start with Group C right there with the U.S. You know, a very similar team to the Four Nations last year. Of course, you know, the heart and soul is probably Brady and Matthew Tkachuk. The best players are probably Austin Matthews, Jack Eichel. Got some local flavor, too, with JT Miller and Vincent Trocheck from the Rangers, Jack Hughes from the Jersey Devils. And if you want to go to the next Islander, you throw in Brock Nelson. Still near and dear to an Islander fan heart. Defense, you've got guys like Quinn Hughes and Charlie McAvoy. But the strength of this team is probably the goaltending with Hellebuck, Ottinger, and Swayman. You know, I think, you know, overall, I think this team, I don't think the top end of the roster matches up with Canada, who we'll talk about in a minute. I think they could really use guys like Cole Caulfield with 32 goals and Jason Robertson with 31 goals who are not on the team. So they could be a little light there. So they're going to need the goaltending to step up. And I think, you know, as long as they play, they'll get through the early rounds fine. But I think whichever one of them gets hot and can carry this team to the gold medal game, that's the best chance of probably facing Canada and trying to knock off Canada for the gold medal. I mean, the two of them are the two favorites there. So let's talk about them, too, in Group A. So Canada, boy, you talk about names. Connor McDavid, Nathan MacKinnon, Macklin Celebrini, three of the top four point scorers in the NHL this season. Oh, I haven't mentioned Sidney Crosby yet either. Bo Horvat, if you want a local team, a little local flavor from the Islanders. Cole Makar on defense. But I think here's where they have a problem, possibly, is their goaltending. You know, Binnington, Kemper, and Thompson. Especially Binnington. Binnington's not playing well this year. That could be the weakness there. If Binnington plays to his capability like he did last year in the Four Nations, he can definitely get hot and run with his team here. But if he's not playing well, he doesn't belong on the ice. And that leaves you with Darcy Kemper, probably the starter. Can Canada outscore teams with Kemper in goal? Yeah. I mean, look at that talent. I mean, you know, guys like Connor Bedard and Evan Bouchard can't even make the team because they're that deep. So they've got the firepower. Is it enough to overcome their goaltending? We'll see. Darren, you got a couple other teams you want to look at?
Well, we're going to go to Group B. We got the two teams from Scandinavia. We're going to start with Team Sweden, okay? Team Sweden is pretty good. But here's the thing. Their Olympic history, not great, right? Last two Olympics, they finished fourth and fifth, right? So they haven't even medaled. But 20 years ago, they did win the gold in Italy, in Turin, in Torino. So this might be their country of luck. Who the hell knows, right? We're going to find out. Listen, they got talent, too. I mean, everybody's got all these NHL players. They got Forsberg and Landeskog and Pedersen and Kempe and Nylander and Zibanejad and Raymond. Tons of depth on Sweden. Defensively, they can play with anybody. I mean, you sit there with Carlson and Hedman as your top two. No one's going to beat them in that stretch. You throw in Rasmus Anderson and Lindholm as the next group. They're really good. Goaltender is going to be Gustafsson. You know, backup is probably Wallstedt, who's also his backup in Minnesota. And then because Markstrom hasn't been that good, the devil. And I don't think that they'll be that effective. This is a team that's got the talent to race up and down. They can put the puck in on anybody. Sweden's got everything that you need in this team for their team to be successful. The biggest problem is that Canada's loaded and the U.S. is loaded. So it's going to be how they get through their group. And their big game is going to be when they play Finland because we've got to see who's going to get the 3 seed and who's going to get the 4 or who's going to get the 2 and the 4, however it's going to work out. Finland, on the other hand, My first question was, does anyone remember who the gold medal team was from last year? Now you all know because Gino told you, but it was Finland that won in Beijing. And, you know, it's a very interesting team. They lost Barkov. That's the biggest loss because of the injury to Barkov. He was going to be their guy, their captain, their best player. And this is a team that you like circa Devils during the Brodeur years. This is a defensive team that's going to counterattack. They're not going to be able to skate with you up and down the ice like everybody else. But what they're going to do is they're going to shut you down. They're going to make the game a little bit uglier. They're going to make it close to the vest. A lot of dump and chase, a lot of old school type of hockey. But even with that, you know, you got Sebastian Aho, who anybody that's an Islander fan knows he's a pain in the ass, right? It's the good Aho, not the Aho that was the Islander. Right, they got Holler, they got Hintz, they got Ratanen, they got a bunch of guys, NHL forwards that can play on defense. They got Heskinen, they got Lindell, they got Mata, they got Ristolainen, they got enough guys that can play. And Juicy Saros is probably going to get the nod and goal. He can play with anybody. So this team has enough talent. Their big game again, 2-13 against Sweden to see if they're going to win the group. But these are the two teams that should get out of B, and it should be the four teams that we talk about. But Joe, there's a couple of sleepers that you're looking at here, Joe.
Yep. Well, if you're a local guy, you brought up the Devils, you got to look at the Swiss. The Swiss have Nico Hischier, Timo Meier, and Jonas Siegenthaler, all from the Devils, playing together. They have Roman Josi as well for the Swiss. So the Swiss in Group A, probably the Swiss and the Czechs. Now, the Czechs have Dostal in goal from the guy from Anaheim. And, you know, the Swiss and the Czechs are probably playing for that second spot. The French don't, you know, I don't think they have much of a chance to get out of there, but I think it's the Swiss and the Czechs fighting for that second spot out of Group A. In Group B, the Italians, they're not doing it. It's over. No. So they're out. The Slovaks, I don't think they're going to get out. I think, like you said, Darren, the Finns and the Swedes. But in the USA, they have two teams, Germany with Leon Draisaitl, who could be the Hart Trophy winner this year. Or he's going to be up there for it. And then you're dealing with Denmark. And Denmark, besides Nicholas Ehlers and Oliver Bjorkstrand on the wing, they have Freddie Anderson in the nets. And you know what? We always talk about the NHL playoffs. You get the hot goalie. Is Freddie Anderson going to be the hot goalie? Is he going to get Denmark out into the medal round? And could he be the one who gets the fourth seed? Could be close. And that's going to come down to that U.S.-Denmark game as well. So it should be good. Those are some of the other guys that are playing in it. But, you know, really the big four are the big four.
Gotcha. So who do you think is going to win it, Jake?
Listen, I think it's Canada's to lose, but I'll be rooting for the U.S. Gold medal odds, by the way, Canada at plus 115, USA at plus 180. And then it really jumps. So Sweden at plus 600, Finland plus 1,100, Czech at plus 1,600. And then it really jumps again. So they kind of already have told us who they think the top five are going to be anyway. you can't bet any of the favorites to medal. It's just too ridiculous. Canada to medal is minus 500. USA to medal is minus 360. So, you know, you can't bet that. You can bet leading scorer, though. So Nathan MacKinnon plus 850, Connor McDavid plus 1100, Austin Matthews at plus 1200. Those are the three favorites for leading scorer right now. I'm going to be rooting hard for USA. I think it comes down to USA Canada in the gold medal game. So I'll root for USA. I'll take USA.
All right. Kev, who Kevin? Do you like?
Yeah, I mean, I'll agree with them on the final game. I mean, I'll go Trollock. I'll go Canada 4-2 in the finals.
Joe?
USA 3-2 in the finals in overtime over Canada.
Wow. Overtime.
And yeah. Any goal scorer? Any prediction on the goal scorer in overtime?
Austin Matthews.
There you go.
Okay. Darren?
The U.S. is going to win the gold over Sweden 4-2. Canada's going to get knocked out a little early.
Ooh.
Okay. Oh.
I'm going to ride the Swedes.
I could see the headlines in Canada tomorrow. That's it.
Both Canadian listeners are irate right now.
We had an NHL trade local that hit today. Actually,
a little bit of a lift. Oh, you want to do hockey first?
Then no. I was just sticking with hockey. Rangers traded Artemi Panarin to the LA Kings. They got a first-round pick back in Liam Greentree and a conditional third-round pick. So, any comments, Darren?
Well, listen, they got rid of the bread man. He was their leading scorer. Basically, the Rangers, who we all thought, just with the addition of the coach, was going to be a very successful team or have a real shot at being successful. Nothing has gone right. Goalie's hurt. It's time to, you know, it's time to clean house a little bit. This is what happens in hockey. When you don't win, you clean house and you start over again. That's what the Rangers are going to do.
Elsewhere in the Olympics, Darren.
Sorry about that. I jumped ahead. Okay, the last two Olympics, the country with the most medals has been, anyone know?
Norway.
You got it, Joseph. I'm sorry about that, Joe. So, yeah, so the U.S. hopes to unseat them this year. Best hopes for golds, okay? Just a couple. Men's figure skating. Ilya Malinin, he's been dominating. Won the Worlds by 31 points. Supposedly, this guy's a slaughter. So we got to hope that this guy wins us a gold. Jordan Stoltz, speed skating. 6 World Championship golds in the 500, 1,000, and 1,500 in the last 2 years. He's a huge threat in all three races. Chloe Kim, women's snowboarding halfpipe. Now, people don't know this, but Gino's going to be covering this event. He was a breakdancer back in the 80s. He understands the halfpipe. He gets it. She won the gold in 2018 and 2022 in the Olympics, looking for the three-peat, as Gino likes to call it. But he's not the only one on location. Joe, a classic ice dancer back in the day after his years at Arthur Murray getting some lessons, is now going to be rooting for Madison Chalk and Evan Bates. Ice dancing, they won the last 3 world championships, and they won gold in the team event. Joe will tell you all about that as we go through the Olympics. Now, other top contenders include Alex Hall, a freestyle skier. Won gold in 2022, beat Kevin by a mere 7 minutes down the mountain. Jesse Diggins, cross-country skiing. She has a good shot in the 10K freestyle and the skiathlon, whatever the hell that means. I forgot to look it up. Lisa Liu, retired a few years at the age of like 16 from figure skating, but she's back. First woman ever to complete the quadruple. Well, so, you know, huge. She's got a shot. Callie Humphrey, and she won the 2025 Worlds, by the way. Callie Humphrey's in the two-man, woman, whatever, bobsled. She won gold in 22. First athlete ever to win gold medals for both the U.S. and Canada in the Olympics. She represented Canada the 2 Olympics before that. Now she reps the U.S., and she won the last time with the U.S. Erin Jackson, speed skating, won the gold in the 500 meter in 22. Expected to be there this year as well. And, of course, we got Michaela Schifrin and 41-year-old Lindsey Vonn. Schifrin is the favorite in the slalom, winningest alpine skier of all time. Vonn is not favored for anything, but you never know. She's 41, and she's back.
You know, she tore her ACL.
Yeah, I know, but yeah. I thought she was back for it. She's not back? She's back from that, right? Yeah.
She's going to ski with the torn ACL.
She's amazing, 41 years old.
You know, she's been finishing on the podium in the World Cup races. Yeah. Fell in the training run. Three of the first 6 to go crashed. They canceled the training run. Of course, she had the worst of the injuries with the ACL. Yep. 41 years old. This is your last Olympics. Unless your knees got to shatter out there, go for it.
You got to admire her. You got to admire Schifrin, too. They're both really, really good. Yep. The two flag bearers will be Erin Jackson, who I mentioned in speed skating, and Frank Del Duca, the bobsled guy. Gino, big fan of his back in the day. They're going to be flag bearers. Listen, the U.S. has a lot of chances to win golds. Let's see what happens. Let's root them home. The one thing is, and Kev's a huge curling guy. I like all the Olympic events. Gino, not a huge Olympic guy, just the way it kind of falls. Joe, I'm not really sure about you. But the thing about it is, some of these guys play in sports that make no money. They work as post office guys, and then they sit there and train for the bobsled for this every 4 years. So I do admire the guys that put this kind of dedication and effort in. Kev, tell us about the curling.
Yeah, USA doesn't look too good.
Okay.
You look at the odds. The men's side there, plus 5,000, which is 8th of the 10 teams.
Wow.
Great Britain, plus 100. Canada, plus 225 are the two favorites.
Apparently they're the favorites. Okay.
Women's side, US is plus 8,000, which is 9th out of 10. Canada's the favorite at minus 210.
Jeez.
And on the mixed doubles, which started today. I was watching some mixed doubles today. This is the best chance for the U.S. to medal. They're plus 700. They're 4th on the odds out of 10. So they have a chance to medal there. Italy's first, followed by Green Bay and Canada. So Italy has their best chance on the mixed doubles to get some curling gold for their home country. But this is a sport that every day there will be a curling match.
It's great.
All the way through the entire Olympics starting today.
Shuffleboard on ice with brooms?
I want to try it.
It's more exciting. I'm sorry. It doesn't look exciting, but when you're in there, it's an angles game, which is a Kev engineering skill thing that he loves. And there's something about having to roll this heavy thing on ice. I don't know. It's kind of fun. Jake?
Yeah. I mean, it's funny. You think of Canada being really good because it's cold. Great Britain's good because all the curling stones are made out of granite, which is found in Scotland and Wales.
There you go. They're the advantage.
I did not know about curling.
I'm much more of a Winter Olympics guy than a Summer Olympics guy. So you will, I will watch Winter Olympics.
All right. Joe, do you like anything about the Olympics?
I do. I like the whole thing. It's going to be interesting. It's something to watch the next 2 weeks because the NHL is going to, other than this, you're not going to see any hockey. So it's good to watch. And the NBA is going to have their all-star break anyway in the middle of the Olympics. So
yep. There's
going to be a four-day period where without the Olympics, there would literally be no sports. College hoops, that would be it.
If things go to plan, I'll probably watch one women's hockey game. Gold medal game should be USA-Canada. U.S. has a good chance to win gold there, too. They're minus 155 to win gold. Canada's plus 115. The next best is Czech at plus 5,000.
Now, the U.S.-Canada women, they go at it. They've had some great championship games over the years.
Yeah. I mean, they've been in overtime how many times for the Olympic gold? I mean, it's always a competitive game.
No doubt about it. All right. That's it for Olympics for me.
Yep.
All right, let's move over. We'll talk a little baseball. A lot of moves being made last week. Actually, one today, tonight, as we're on the air. Framber Valdez signs a three-year, $150 million contract with the Detroit Tigers. Darren, comments?
Yeah, I was reading this morning that Pittsburgh was the front runner, which stunned me. A Detroit staff is going to be really good. They were in it last year, and they're only stronger now by adding Valdez to them. It's a lot of money for these guys. I'm not necessarily a huge believer in Framber for long term, but they didn't have to pay him long term. It was a 3-year deal, so
3 years.
Yeah, it's a pretty smart move.
And an opt out after year two, so it's not the worst. Do you have a couple of the other moves?
Nope.
The only one was Carlos Santana went to Arizona, play there. And the other thing I had was the fences at Kauffman Stadium are being lowered and moved in. So if you had a Kansas City pitcher and you relied on the fact that that was the second biggest ballpark in the league, it's not anymore. They're trying to move it up and get some offense going in Kansas City.
Okay, since we were here last week, the Reds signed Eugenio Suarez, 1 year, $15 million, taken away from Seattle. Seattle then reacted, made a three-team trade where they brought in Brendan Donovan from the Cardinals. Mm-hmm. Three prospects go to the Cardinals. The Rays get their baseman Ben Williamson in the deal. White Sox, they traded for Jordan Hicks from the Red Sox. They also signed Sir Anthony Dominguez, so they strengthened their bullpen up in a 24-hour period. San Francisco brought in Harrison Bader. Then they also signed Luis Arraez to a 1 year, $12 million deal, Darren.
Yeah, that upset me. I wanted him to come back to the Padres.
And that's deals that I've seen so far. Movement going on. Not a lot else going on with the Yankees and Mets at this moment.
Nope.
They may be set as we hit spring training here.
You mentioned the Rays. I did see this one thing. Since 2023, there have been six three-team trades in Major League Baseball.
Mm-hmm.
Rays have been involved with five of them. Does that surprise you, though, with the Rays?
No, because they're always sitting there trying to, balance money and everything else.
Yeah.
They're like a one-legged man in an ass-kicking contest. They have to figure out how to do it, and it's not easy for them.
Does the GM just sit around, hey, you're making a trade? Let me get in on that.
Maybe I can get a couple of prospects and some cash consideration.
Well, a lot of teams don't like to trade with them either because the Rays usually figure out the guy to get from you that's going to be halfway decent, and then they can't keep him after a couple of years.
And all they do is find 6'8" guys that can throw 106 miles an hour that's and they just line them up. It's brutal.
All right, any other sports you guys want to touch on, Kev?
Australian Open. The men's side, the semifinals, incredible. Alcaraz beat Zverev 5 sets, 5.5 hours.
Wow.
Djokovic beat Sinner 5 sets, only 3.5 hours. So he had an easy day by comparison. And then in the final, Alcaraz beat Djokovic in 4 sets. The youngest ever to win a career Grand Slam. He's only 22 years old. He's already got 7 Grand Slams.
He's a stud.
Now,
on the women's side, Rybakina got her 2nd career Grand Slam. She beat the 1-seed Sabalenka, who seems to make the final in every major the last couple of years.
I don't know if you guys were on the air or not afterwards, but Novak actually got out of, what was it, the quarterfinals. He had lost the first 2 sets.
Yeah, Bizzetti.
Yeah, and
he had a withdrawal.
So who knows if he even gets to the semis, let alone gets to the finals.
Yeah. And his match before that was a walkover as well. So he didn't really play a match that he was ahead in 3 matches. But then he found a way to beat Sinner. And just could not handle Alcaraz. But, you know, you got to give it to Novak. He's not a young man, and he's still competing with this 22-year-old kid.
Nice, hanging in there.
I mean, it's amazing. At 38 years old, he's still clearly the 3rd best player in the world.
Yeah, it's not even that close. It's not. You guys have anything else before we wrap this shindig up?
One little Super Bowl thing that I want to mention is if you have the numbers in your pool 0 and 2, do not fear, because 9 times there have been safeties in the Super Bowl, and 3 times the safety was the first score in the game. In Super Bowl 9, the Steelers got a safety against the Vikings. In Super Bowl 46, the Giants got a safety when Brady had the holding penalty in the intentional grounding in the end zone.
Yep.
And in Super Bowl 48, if we remember the first play, Peyton Manning said hike, and he put his head down, and they shot the ball all the way out the end zone. So 3 times Super Bowl was 2-0. So don't fret if you have 0 and 2 in your box pool. You still have a chance.
Thank you, Joe, giving everybody a little luck and a little hope.
That's it.
Anything else, boys, before we wrap it up? We are the Sports Kings from Queens. Darren here with Kevin, here with Gino, here with Joe. Talk about the wonderful, wild, and wacky world of sports. A wacky world where I'm forced to kind of think that the Patriots might win another damn Super Bowl. Please download the podcast anywhere you get a podcast, whether it be an Apple product, Spotify, TuneIn, whatever you like. We're posting a ton on social. Please like, share, join. Join the Sports Kings from Queens Brigade. We're going all the way. We want you to be on the coattails and ride with us. And we're going to have a Super Bowl recap right after the game. We'll get that out to you guys by Sunday night, Monday morning at the latest. You'll be able to know exactly what happened. And without any further ado, may your sports be with you.